Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Just in case you didn't know, saris are very multi-purposes. You can have lots of uses for saris. Yeah, right. All right. With your blue jeans, it doesn't work, but saris works. Okay. Narayanam namaskrityam.
Narayanam namaskrityam.
Naram jaiva narottamam. Devim saraswatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirayat. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. So can we say this together? A lot of new faces. Do you know the English? Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest. Let's say it separately, okay? Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And so here's what happens when you do this. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome in the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay, so today's verse is from the 11th canto, 14th chapter, text 20. Na sadhyati mam yogo. Na sankhyam dharma udhava. Na sadhyayas tapastyago. Yata bhaktir mamorjita. Nasadyati mam yogo. Nashankam dharma udhava. Nasadvya nasad nasvadyayas tapastyago. Yata bhaktir mamorjita. Ready to chant? Nasadyati mam yogo. Another thing. Thanks. Nasadyati mam yogo. Na sankhyam dharma udava. Na svadhyayas tapasyago. Atad bhaktir mamojita. One more. Na sadhyayati mam yogo. Na sankhyam dharma udava. Nasvadyayas tapastyago. Yata bhaktir mamojita. Now we're going to chant the word for word. So pay attention to these words because you hear these words a lot in different verses and everything, and the more you become familiar with them, the more you'll understand their meaning in different contexts, okay? Na, not. Sadyati,
brings under control.
Mam,
me.
Yogaha, the yoga system. Na, nor. Sankhyam, the system of Sankhya philosophy. Dharma, highest activities within the Varnashram system. Uddhava, my dear Uddhava. Na, not. Svadhyaya, Vedic study. Tapa, austerity. Tyaga, renunciation. Yata, as. Bhakti, devotional service. Mama, unto me. Urjita, strongly developed. So the translation and the purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotee brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. So please repeat. Let's do it together since it's up there on the board, okay? My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. So this is Krishna speaking to his friend, Uddhava. Uddhava was a very dear friend of Krishna who associated with the Lord in Dwarka. Actually, Uddhava was such a good friend of the Lord that he actually looked like Krishna. He was dark-colored. He wore yellow garments. He wore all the prasadam that Krishna had given him. So when Krishna went to Vrindavan one time to deliver a message, the gopis, just quickly looking at him, they thought, is that Krishna? Then they looked closer and they saw that it wasn't, but he looked so much like Krishna. He was a very confidential friend. So Krishna is giving Uddhava this very confidential information here. So what did he say in your words? What did he just say in that verse? What's the gist of it, that verse, in your own words? Krishna is only controlled by love. Very good. I mean, we can say these things so quickly, but actually what does that mean? What kind of love? Unalloyed. And what does unalloyed love mean? Pure, selfless, what else? Without the tinge of karma and jnana, what she's saying there? Without motivations. Now, when we think of that in relation to ourselves, we see that there's a little bit further we have to go to get to that point, no? Because even, and we're encouraged. If you have a desire, worship Krishna, because that's how he's the source of everything. He's going to fulfill your desires. But if you, so how to get to that point without desires? Well, here's the process. Anyway, let's hear what Prabhupada says in the purport, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Purport. One may make Krishna the goal of mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, etc. Yet, such activities do not please the Lord as much as direct loving service, which one practices by hearing and chanting about the Lord and executing his mission. So you have to pay attention because we're not just like here with our brains turned off. We have to turn the brain on and see how does this apply to us. So what did he just say there? What did Prabhupada just say there in that sentence? As we look at it one more time. What was it? Go ahead. Shruti. Okay.
Hearing, chanting, and also spread his mission.
Saving the souls. Good. Thanks. Someone else, even if you repeat it, but say it in your own words. What did you just get from that sentence? Gopal. That's a very good point. You can perform these other processes. Sankhya yoga and mystic yoga, these processes are bona fide. They are actually processes to attain realization of Krishna, understanding of Krishna. But they're not as pleasing to him as one who engages in his direct devotional service. And so what does that mean? I can't remember your name. Lacey? Okay, Lacey. Oh, that's a good question, too. Sankhya is a system of yoga. Sankhya means counting. So it's like an analytical study of the nature of the universe, how it was created, how the elements came into being, this and that and this and that. It's very detailed. Way beyond astronomy. You know, but like astronomy, complicated. For someone who's a little simple, you know, astronomy is, you know, it's very complicated. So Sankhya is a deep understanding of how the universe is created, but not an atheistic view, because it has, you have to understand what's the source, who's the source, and who actually gets all that, the source of all that power. So Krishna's saying here, Prabhupada's saying here, that becoming a lover, a true lover of the Lord, that's more powerful, because one gets to control him that way. By love. Krishna's controlled by love. He's not controlled by, you know, austerity, by tapa austerity, by this, by that, by giving. And he's not controlled even by brahmacharya. All these vows that we're hearing that are actually quite noble and pious, that doesn't control Krishna. Love controls Krishna. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Srila Rupa Goswami states, jnana kamarda navritam, a devotee should simply depend on Krishna and should not unnecessarily complicate his loving service with tendencies towards fruitive work or mental speculation. The residents of Vrindavan simply depend on Lord Krishna. When the great serpent Agasura appeared in the precincts of Raj, the cowherd boys, completely confident of their friendship with Lord Krishna, fearlessly marched into the serpent's gigantic mouth. Such pure love of Krishna brings the Lord under the control of the devotee. So, in quoting Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami is giving us in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu the science of devotional service. So in there, he gives right in the very beginning, the definition, how to understand what pure devotional service is. We're talking about that as our goal, so we have to understand what it is. And it's been already mentioned, different aspects of devotional service shouldn't be tinged with the desire for knowledge. Interesting, huh? And why are we studying? No. So shouldn't be tinged with the desire for knowledge or how to perform fruitive activities for material gain. We might see that actually that's what we're doing all the time. I'm doing this devotional service because I know it's good for me. I know I'll get a good result. I know Krishna will take care of me. Is there a little fruitive action in there? There might be. It might be tinged with fruitive action. But here, the residents of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys, when they first came across Agasura. Do you remember some of the reactions from the story in Krishna book when the cowherd boys first saw Agasura, what their reaction was? Some of them? They thought, this is a cave. I don't remember it being there. It's huge. What else did they think? Somebody said, but it could be a demon. You know, look at those fangs. That could be, you know, teeth, it could be a demon. Tulsi Rani?
It doesn't matter,
even if it's a demon, Krishna will protect us. And then as Prabhupada says there, well actually, as the commentators on the Bhagavatam, because now we've got the 11th canto, so this is Gopi Pranadana, Haridananda Maharaj and crew, their comments, they're in the line of Prabhupada, saying, it doesn't matter. They didn't care. They fearlessly, even if it is a demon, Krishna will protect us like he's done all the time in the past. And they're totally dependent on that. So how to come to that point? the instructions are given in this verse and purport a little bit. How to come to that point so that we can become 100% dependent on Krishna. Some new faces and hands? And I can't remember your name either. Gauranga Prasadas. Oh, cool. Jai. Always chant in here. Develop your relationship to Krishna that way. That's the key. That's the key. This is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of the message. Because by always chanting and hearing, one can develop that love. Now, we might say, well, you know, I've got this to do and that to do, and I'm so busy, and I have so many responsibilities, and life takes so many twists and turns unexpectedly. And, you know, I don't really have a heck of a lot of time to do this. I don't really have a taste for hearing and chanting. Actually, most of the times, as soon as I open the book, you know, at the end of the day to read, it's almost as if Brahms' lullaby comes out. And I'm asleep really quickly. But still, in spite of that, in spite of those challenges, if you make it a practice, especially early on in your devotional service, make it a practice to hear, read, listen, and then repeat what you've read. Even a little bit, even 15 minutes, even this or that. Sporadically, it's okay. But if you can do it regularly, then you'll see that process of devotional service. Prabhupada says in the early cantos, I don't remember, second canto or whatever one, early canto, it said you can't understand it materially. Why is it that by hearing these things, your heart will become cleansed? He said you can't understand that materially, but it does happen. By hearing about Krishna, by reading, and then especially by repeating, by trying to assimilate what you've read and repeat it in your own words, then that process cleanses the heart, and you'll see a taste will develop. So much, we have the tendency to talk, right? Have you noticed? We have the tendency to talk all the time. And there's so much information that needs to be exchanged about so many things and so many unnecessary things that get exchanged anyway. But they don't satisfy one as much as even just a little bit of Krishna Katha. Have you experienced that? Have you on your own? Try it. Try to experience it. If you haven't experienced it, try to experience it. Make an effort. Especially this is a special month, Kartik. And again, here again, it exemplifies, it personifies how Krishna is controlled by love. Mother Yasoda chasing her son with a stick. Here it is. It's just like if you can picture whoever you might consider in your life, a mundane, great personality, you know, whether it be, I won't even mention names because I'm sure my names will be totally different from whoever you would be thinking of. But can you imagine that person, you know, being chased by his mother, you know, as a little child, being chased by his mother, you know, with a stick because, you know, he just did something naughty, you know. But Krishna, so here it gives reference to this process of Sankhya, the yogis who study the universe, they study the and perform such austerities to understand what they're doing, and what the yogis who want to attain mystic powers, and they go and surround themselves by fire. What determination? Could we even muster that determination up? To just, you know, I'm going to become self-realized, so therefore I'm going to go sit out in the desert. I'm going to surround myself by fire. I'm going to go up to Alaska, and I'm going to, you know, dip crack the ice and go in the water there and, you know, meditate. Or something like, what determination? Even for ourselves, you know, what, like when just recently all the Olympics were just going on. And so all that determination, I read one little article on how the Navy SEALs were training up the Olympic swimmers a little bit. You know, they had done all their austerity to get to the Olympics, and they thought that they were well-trained, so that the Navy SEALs took them out for a little bit of training on their standard. And it was brutal for them. It was totally brutal. But they had to undergo that in order to get what? That gold medal, the bronze medal, the this medal, whatever they wanted, you know. They had to go through so much determination. And yet, those, if that was dovetailed for a transcendental goal, it wouldn't come close to the achievement, we could say, if you want to put it in those terms, that Mother Yasoda had by her love. By her love for Krishna, she didn't care at all who he was, because all she knew who he was that this is my son, and I have to train him up properly to be a good boy, or else he might, Prabhupada says, or he might become a hippie. He said that. He said he might become a hippie, and that would be terrible. And so by her love, she could chase him with a stick and what? Capture him. She couldn't capture him by her own endeavor, only by her endeavor. By her endeavor, she put the rope around his little waist, which she had dressed. She had dressed him early with his little sacred, whatever it was, talisman, you know, around his waist, his little black thread with the kavacha on it or whatever. She had dressed him in the morning. And so now, a few hours later, when he was being naughty and she wanted to tie him up to that mortar, she got the little rope for that they tie the calf's legs with, put it around his waist, and lo and behold, it didn't quite make it. So get another rope, tie it on there. It's not that the rope went around twice and still didn't make it. It didn't even go around once, even with the extra rope on it. That's the I always, it's like, you know, you think about that. And she got all the ropes in the village, and it still didn't even go around once. First, I used to think it went around a few times, but then when she went to tie it, she couldn't tie it. No, it didn't even go around once, even with all the ropes in the village. And when Krishna saw her intense endeavor, and that she was perspiring and this and that, and she was so determined, then he allowed himself to be tied up. So there's a lesson there that's told by the acharyas, that we have to make our endeavor. We have to make our endeavor to try to please Krishna, but at the same time, we can't have an imbalance in our mind of our importance. It can't be out of proportion. I'm making such a nice endeavor. I'm really endeavoring way harder than anybody else here. I get up early, I chant my rounds, I do this, I do that. These guys, some of them sleep in, this and that one eats too much, and that one talks pachalpa, and I'm so much better. It's, you know, we can't have that type of, you know, disproportionate or overestimation of our own abilities, because it's not by our abilities, but we have to make our endeavor. We have to show the Lord that we're trying. That's what Krishna's so kind. We don't have to be perfect, but we have to endeavor with determination. And by that endeavor, Krishna will bestow his mercy. So it's endeavor and it's mercy. So those two things, that's what balances out the scale of bhakti. We have to make our endeavor. So we're reading now how the theme of these classes is the superiority, the superior position of bhakti. Because and what makes it superior is the goal. The goal of love for Krishna is so satisfying to the soul. That's not found in all the other processes, mystic yoga, Sankhya, this one, that one, any other philosophy. That satisfaction of the self, which is what is motivating all of us in all our endeavors. And unfortunately, if you don't get on the path of bhakti, all your endeavors to be satisfied through so many different paths, it never leads to what? That satisfaction of the soul. And even in the process of executing devotional service, we still have to stay vigilant, because one can become very expert in the superficialities of devotional service. Putting on your tilak, putting on your dhoti, this or that, you know, taking prasadam nicely, or whatever. I don't know why I looked over there when I said that. That's teasing. But those things are important, but they're not the essence is how is your love for Krishna developing? And how does your love for Krishna develop? It doesn't develop in a vacuum, in a box. I'm going to be Krishna conscious on my own in a box. But it actually, one of the symptoms of how it develops is how do we relate in loving, how do we see our relationship with other people? How do we relate with other devotees? That's how it develops. That we see beyond all the material manifestations, all the quirks, the personality quirks, beyond the personality quirks that maybe some of you have. I don't know, all of you. But we all have them, you know? We all have these little things. Beyond that is the spirit soul inside the body who actually wants Krishna also. They might be covered by so many things, by actions and reactions of so many past activities, and be acting in a certain way, sometimes more favorable, sometimes less favorable for devotional service. But aside from that, that's not who they are. Did you ever think about that? Especially if somebody's bugging you. That's not who they are. They're really a pure lover of Krishna. Somehow or other, they have a pure relationship with Krishna, just like I do. Might be different than my relationship with Krishna, but they have one. And somehow it's covered by so many things and by the influence of the modes of nature, whatever the circumstance might be acting in this way, might be really bugging you at this time. But that's not who they are. They really are a spirit soul. If we act and reach out on that platform, then you'll get that reciprocation back. So these are just some of the things about this verse that makes it so, that explains or gives us a little bit of illumination on the superior position of bhakti. Because if somebody's doing something by love, because of love, their motivation is so much more intense than if they're doing it by duty. It's my duty. I'm doing this because it's my duty. I'm doing this because I have a certain goal that I want to achieve by doing this. But if I'm doing it because of love, I don't care what happens. I'll do it no matter what. Whether I get, what are some of Lord Chaitanya's prayers? Whether I get reciprocation from Krishna or not, whether I feel that reciprocation or not, I'll still do it. You can handle me roughly. These are like way advanced. You can handle me roughly by your embrace, or you can make me brokenhearted. It doesn't matter. I'm still your unalloyed servant. Life after life, no matter what happens. So these are like, whoa, these are like, again, they're like Lord Chaitanya's prayers, Shikshastika prayers, so many things. So we are recommended to learn them, to repeat them. And oftentimes, we can do that. Really easily. Yeah. And then you think, whoa, what's going on here? And then Krishna tests a little bit, and you think, and you just like you execute your devotional service for some time, and you're thinking, yeah, I'm making progress. I can feel it. You know, Krishna's very kind. He's reciprocating. Yeah. And then Krishna kind of like shows you a little bit. Oh. You think, oh. Shows you your attachments, shows you your, you know, some frailty or whatever, misconceptions, and you think, oh, wow, I'm not so advanced as I thought I was. But that's actually mercy. And actually, sorry, but that's a little distraction. But anyway, that's a real sign that you're finally making advancement. When you actually realize, go beyond the ego, when you actually realize, oh, I'm not as advanced as I thought I was. Oh, I'm not as important as I thought I was. Oh, that's a real sign, because the covering of false ego is so great over our real consciousness that it's often very hard to penetrate. Very hard. I'm reading in the second canto. Is not the heart steel framed that doesn't melt on chanting the holy name? Yep, it is. It's steel framed. It's hard to develop that. I just remembered now the next verses. Do you want me to go to 21 and 22? Okay, sorry. So let's read text 21. We'll do the English. Okay? Vaishnav, you want to read that verse? When you get it? Yeah. Whoop. 21. Okay. Yeah, you get it. Thanks.
I read the translation?
Yes, sir.
Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth.
Okay. What did you get from that verse? What struck you? Gopal? Oh, okay. Obtain like an inheritance. And that reminds me of Lord Brahma's verse. Tatenu kampam sushamikshamanam. Lord Brahma, he prayed to the Lord. He said, if one can go on in their life suffering the results of their suffering the results of their impious activities or enjoying the results of pious activities. So suffering or enjoyment, whatever might come. And if you offer the result to Krishna, whatever comes, if something bad happens and you're thinking, oh, actually, you know, in reality, even though this is terrible, I know that I actually deserve worse because I've committed so many sinful activities in so many lives for so long. I deserve a lot worse. But Krishna, he's so kind. He's just giving me a token, just a little bit of what I deserve. And then if something good happens in your life, you think, wow, Krishna's really kind because I don't really deserve this, but he's giving me this by his mercy. So whichever happens in our life, we're thinking, this is Krishna's mercy. Then Brahma says, then one becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God because it's like their inheritance. Because you have the proper attitude. Everything that's happening in my life is because of Krishna's mercy. Then you get your inheritance at the time of death of entering into the kingdom of God. Sorry. Do you want to read the next verse too? We got verses, right? Do you have purport there or just verses? Not yet. Go to the next verse and then we'll open the purport. Okay, yeah.
Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy nor knowledge obtained with great penance can completely purify one's consciousness if they are bereft of loving service to me.
That's a very important concept. Did you get it there? What did he say there? In your own words. What's your name? Menka?
Basically, it said that if you don't have love for Krishna, then, the religious activities that you perform or even knowledge that you have will not matter.
Okay, good. Very good. Something else? And can you tell me what your name is? Can you pass the mic up? Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, you need the mic. Even though you have a nice loud voice. Thanks.
Thank you. I want to know if you can define mercy in this context.
Mercy. Now, that's a great... Hold on, hold that question, okay? We'll come back to it. Can we go back to this verse? Because there's another very important point in this verse. What's another thing that you get from this verse? You need the microphone too, because there's other people. Okay, here he's got it this way. All right.
Purify one's consciousness without love, with other activities, one cannot purify one's consciousness.
Okay. Say that. And what will happen if you don't purify your consciousness, even though you're doing those austerities?
You will not obtain Krishna.
True. Something else. Someone in the corner there, did you want to say something? Yes. Did you? What? And your name is?
My name is Trista.
Okay, thanks. And,
well, I'm reminded of the Bible chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, looking at this, the love chapter, and it talks about how you can undergo such great austerities, but without any love in your heart, it's basically meaningless. And this, I mean, it's pretty much, you can obtain supreme knowledge, and you can have such great mercy and austerity, but without love, you will not really be able to obtain, you know, pure, you know, Prema Krishna. You won't be able to really purify yourself, and you won't be able to really enter that kingdom.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that with us. Very good. But there's another result that happens. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Okay, that's a good point too, because oftentimes we just, you know, totally disregard the process of yoga or mystic or austerity or charity or mercy or honesty. We just disregard. Oh no, bhakti's superior and we're superior. Well, yeah. Okay. You. Yes. Thanks. Sorry. And can you tell me what your name is? Wow, Gaura Leela Das.
Yes. I got the same thing as Shyamala Kishori Prabhu over there. If you read in Bhagavad Gita, 12th chapter, verses 10 through 15,
okay,
in the purports, Prabhupada talks about these kind of things like doing pious activity. He talks about pure bhakti, of course.
Yes.
But then if you can't do this, then he offers a process. If you can't do this, then he offers a process. Like, if you can't do pure devotional service, then he says, like, contribute to the Krishna conscious movement in some way or another. And
good.
If you don't really feel inclined, if you don't really feel confident in the Krishna conscious movement, then you could do some charity work. Like, you know, give to hospitals or hungry people or something. And he says, if you can't even do that, then just try to educate yourself in some way.
Yeah.
And that also reminds me of in Bhagavad Gita when Krishna talks about the Shankya philosophy.
Okay.
And he's finished talking about the Shankya philosophy. And Prabhupada purports that the reason he spoke the Shankya philosophy was to bring him to the platform of being receptive to hearing about pure bhakti.
Okay.
Bhakti yoga. Bhakti
okay.
yoga.
Okay.
So I thought it was interesting to note that, like, all those processes, they bring you to the platform of bhakti. But with, you know, our movement, we can actually, it's really easiest to do devotional, pure direct devotional service.
That's the point of all of these things too, that these processes of yoga or whatever, yoga, like you're familiar with the term, the yoga ladder, they're gradually bringing one to the point of pure devotional service. So that's a good point. But there's another point that I got from this verse, is these two verses. So in 22, neither religious activities endowed with honesty can completely purify one's consciousness. So if one's consciousness isn't pure, yes, now would you like to say something? Say that again now.
Purely Krishna conscious, and if we don't become purely Krishna conscious, we cannot go back to spiritual world. So there will be some...
Okay, but all of the points that you're all bringing up are correct. It's not that they're not correct, you know, so that's also correct. I'm looking at it from a different point, that if the consciousness is not completely pure, then desires, there's still material desire in the heart. And then sooner or later, those material desires sprout. They fructify. The seed of material desire is there in the heart. And if it's not, if the heart isn't pure, if the love for Krishna isn't strong and pure, then when those material desires sprout, then one acts on them. And if one acts on them, then one is deviated from pure devotional service. But when the heart is pure, doesn't mean that contamination might manifest or whatever, the desire might manifest, but you don't act on it. And therefore, you don't get deviated. So there's so many classic examples of Vishwamitra Muni and this one and that one, meditating, doing this and that, and becoming, you know, great and very powerful yogis. But because that process doesn't completely purify the heart, then, you know, when the little desire comes, then they're immediately deviated by that desire. What to speak of the fact that he couldn't even recognize such a great devotee. They can't even recognize devotees and their advanced platform. And they're thinking that they're materialists, and then they offend devotees, and then so much happens. I have to go back to Mike's question first before I take your other comments. So Mike had a really good question that's not an easy answer. You know, you can't just give a definition. What is mercy? It's a great topic to contemplate and see what is mercy. Actually, this is not a book answer. This is just my answer. Anything is mercy. Anything is mercy. You break your leg, it's mercy. You lose your job, it's mercy. It's mercy. How do you take it? If you take it that it brings you closer to Krishna, that's Krishna's mercy. And the fact that, let's just say, using these silly little examples, you break your leg, you lose your job, you break your leg and you don't think of Krishna, that's also Krishna's mercy too for the fallen soul. They're getting their mercy in the sense of they're getting what they want as a result of their activities. Unfortunately, they haven't got to the point where they want Krishna. So they're getting their entanglement in fruitive activities, and indirectly, by suffering over and over again the result of their activities, then they will gradually come to the point saying, this isn't making me happy. I have to try another thing. I have to keep searching. So everything is Krishna's mercy. Just a question of how you see it. But we're going to open that one up for some discussion. So I'd like to hear what Kalakanta would have to say. Can we pass the mic down here? And maybe even Brahmatirtha, if he would so kindly like to contribute.
Just very quickly that a devotee is very dear to Krishna, and even if we're not such advanced devotees, we're very new devotees, we still become dear to Krishna by making the effort. And thus, whatever happens to a devotee is mercy. And especially for us in our neophyte stage, things happen from Krishna that we totally don't expect. Like you said, very unpredictable. And we're sort of in the mindset that, okay, Krishna, whatever you send, I'll accept that. Except for that. I wasn't expecting that.
Just give me the roses. Don't throw the thorns.
I can do some austerities, but not that. That's just, you know,
yeah.
He has a way of just finding our soft spot.
Yeah. he has a way of finding our soft spot. It's true. Brahmatirtha Prabhu, would you like to add?
I think mercy in the context of this verse has a dictionary definition. That's appropriate. A blessing that is an act of divine favor or compassion. So here we're talking about religious activities that are. That verse is gone, but I had the verse here. We're talking about religious activities that are mercy. Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy. So in that context of mercy, in that context, religious people are compassionate. They do nice things, you know. Help old lady across the street, you'd say, well, that's a pious person, you know. And serve out 1,000 meals a day to somebody, that's a mercy thing. So it's showing compassion in interest. So mercy is certainly a quality that we find in the mode of goodness, but what it and showing that compassion and open-heartedness and kindness, and sometimes it can be used in the context, I think as Nanda was mentioning, of divine intervention. It's Krishna's mercy, but we can have our mercy too. In the context here, mercy enough, and the four legs of a bull of religiosity, mercy is there, and one of them is honesty, and honesty is the last one that sort of wobbles around in Kali Yuga a little bit. And so let's say you had the last vestige of the quality of Kali Yuga, you have honesty, you even have some mercy. These are good things, as Nanda well pointed out, but it can't completely purify the heart. Sometimes I've seen a little bit, well, devotees say, well, honesty and mercy can't purify the heart. Therefore, I don't quite have to be honest and merciful. That is not what that verse is saying. And Krishna, he was on the battlefield, And, you know, this whole thing was Ashwatthama. It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't exactly honest. And so sometimes that happens. And even in Damodar, Krishna was asked by Mother Yasoda, well, what is that in your mouth? I didn't eat any dirt. So these things happen too.
Okay. Thanks. Prabhu, would you like to add something?
I was just wondering, in a Vaishnava context, whether we can say mercy is something that one does not deserve but obtains. For example, you know, we pray to for the mercy of the Vaishnavas, but we may not deserve their blessings, but we still pray to them and we expect that. So it's something that you do not deserve it, but you obtain it, or you give it, although someone does not deserve it. Is that...
That's true in many cases. I mean, mercy means what we're looking for, causeless mercy. It's out without a cause. It's not like... I've done this, so I deserve that. No, I'm asking for your benediction for this and that, even though I don't deserve it. It's mercy. So that's correct too. Also, thank you, Prabhu. Oh, here's one, a close one. And can you tell me what your name is? Oh, again.
Bhakti John.
And what was your name? Rupa Chandra. Okay, thanks.
My question was going to be through the processes of austerities, is that going to lead us to bhakti yoga, like pure love of Krishna? Because Garuda Das Prabhu was talking about, you know, humility isn't something that we always get right away. Like, oh, you know, I need to learn to be more humble. It's like a cultivational process. Mm-hmm. Is that what can be said about bhakti?
Mm-hmm. It's a cultivation. Bhakti is a cultivation. That's actually defined there in Srila Rupa Goswami's definition. It's a cultivation. Just like the farmer cultivates the field before he's going to plant his crop. I know this is an old-fashioned example. How many of you have ever planted a garden? Anyway, whatever. So still you have to do some... Okay, good. You have to do some preparation. Anything. You have to do some preparation in order to make the atmosphere conducive to get the results you want. So bhakti is like that. And also, as Brahmatirtha was pointing out, because it's saying that mercy and honesty is not enough, it doesn't mean that we don't cultivate those things. We do cultivate. We do cultivate mercy. We do cultivate honesty. We do cultivate humility. We cultivate our love for Krishna. We cultivate the desire to hear. Because without that cultivation, without making that endeavor, the atmosphere isn't conducive. Even taking prasadam, we can do it in a mechanical way, thinking, I'm starved, it's time for breakfast, yippee, I'm glad it's here. Or we can also think, oh, I'm starved, I'm really glad Krishna's provided this prasadam, you know, and see it as Krishna's mercy.